Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
You want some mocha, baby?
You got it. How you doing, people? Bobby Rivers here. Thank you for listening to Mocha, the podcast that is done to you, done for you by a man of a certain hue and age. That is what Mocha stands for. I had the great opportunity to interview someone who is an international cinema legend. We are talking about Kirk Douglas. September the 12th, 1988, a special day in my life because that was the premiere of Watch Bobby Rivers, the talk show that I had on VH1. And my first guest was Kirk Douglas. I had a half-hour show Monday through Friday, and get this, because Keith is probably going to go, Lord, it always happens. This show went on the air, and think about what independent black filmmakers go through today. No marketing. There was no commercial for it. Nothing.
I just remember being in Texas going, oh, hey!
What's that?
Who knew?
Who knew? And the backstory is, you know, there was a woman who booked the guest for the show, and apparently I'm very proud to say that I had a good reputation with the top publicists. So she said, we've got, for the first week, we've got Kirk Douglas for one whole show, Meryl Streep, one whole show, Marlo Thomas, one whole show, Mel Gibson, one whole show, and one whole show. Did I say a one whole show?
Again, you're projecting. We'll edit that out.
No, we won't keep that in.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Single. What are you doing after the show?
What you want me to do?
Ow! Wow.
So I said, oh my gosh, I got Kirk Douglas. Now keep in mind at VH1 that just about all the producers and executives are white dudes. And so a couple of them said to me, wow, couldn't you get Michael Douglas instead? And I said, okay,
Do you know his agent?
You know his agent. Okay, trust me on this. Kirk Douglas is a good booking. You know, maybe not to you. You know, because
you're 12.
Because you're 12. You know, you want Al B. Sure or Rick Astley, but Kirk Douglas is a good booking. And I'm thinking, you know, as a black man, I may never get this opportunity again.
Get to sit down with this old man.
Want to have a national show, and I'm talking to Kirk Douglas. All right, so we had the set designer was a great guy, and we had just built the set for my show. And it's a Tuesday, and we're testing the set. We're testing for lights and stuff. We're about to break for lunch because later on in the week, we start taping the show for the September 12th Monday airing. Okay, I get a frantic call from the front desk. And our receptionist was so cool. She said, Bobby, can you hear me? Now, you know when they start talking to you like that. When they get up close, you're like, can you hear me? Because I can't talk real loud.
And I'm thinking, somebody's watching me.
Right. And, you know, you're
natural.
Your mind just goes Dorothy Parker. You're thinking, what fresh hell is this? And I said, okay, what's going on? She said, Kirk Douglas is in the lobby. I said, what? Kirk Douglas is in the lobby for you. And I said, he's not due till it's Tuesday. He's not supposed to be here until Thursday. You want me to tell Spartacus to go home? No, I'll be done with you.
I am Spartacus. I'm early, but I'm Spartacus.
And then all the other people in the lobby are going, I'm Spartacus. I'm Spartacus. So I had just, minutes before, I had just been given the copy of the book that he was promoting. So I went down, and I go down. there is Kirk Douglas, a living legend, by himself.
And at that time, he was hot silver daddy Kirk.
Yes. Yeah, he wasn't like this was before scary the stroke. Old man. Yeah. This was before. So he's there, casual attire, no publicist, no entourage, no nothing. And I said, "Hi, Mr. Douglas, I'm going to be right back. Thank you very much. I'll be right here." I go running upstairs to the crew. The guys have they've got sandwiches hanging out their mouths. Kirk Douglas is in the lobby. So the set designer.
We've got a 911. What are we going to do?
And the set designer said, "Well, we can shoot on the set because it tested. Everything's fine." And they're like gobbling. I said, okay. I told him I'd be back in a couple of minutes. Lord knows I have no time to read the book, but I know I'll his films. Mm-hmm. I've watched his movies. So they said, okay, we're going to bring him up. So I go down to escort him up to the studio floor. And I said, I was trying to find out how he got there 2 days early.
You know you early, right?
That's what I wanted to say.
Excuse me, Mr. Douglas. I just had one thing to ask you a question.
You know you real early.
Early? What am I supposed to do with you when you're early? Like by a week?
Right? So he showed me his itinerary for the day, and I went, oh, I can see. Uh-huh. Where he had his schedule, mm-hmm. and what looked like What was supposed to be a TH mm-hmm. for Thursday looked like a TU. So he didn't want it, he wanted to, I just want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing. So I'll show up for the black guy a couple of days early.
And turn him white as a ghost.
Man, let me tell you, I made it through. And he loved the interview. I'm proud that he loved the interview.
Oh, good.
You know, because it was, and I'm thinking of my parents. Why are you reading all those film books? Because one day it's going to pay off.
This is the moment you call your mother. You see, Mom?
You see? If I could have looked into the future, why am I reading these books? Because one day you're going to be divorced. Dad is going to go to Canada. There will be no child support. All that responsibility will fall upon me. That's why I'm reading these books.
This is going to be the only time I have to do it in my life.
I can only do it now. And later on, the money will go to keep a roof over your head.
So, hey.
And to put my brother through parochial school.
But I digress.
But I digress. Kirk Douglas gave a wonderful interview. He stayed, he charmed the crew. He was so gracious and just, he was everything you hoped he would be. And he was really interested in hearing how, when my parents saw Spartacus, they saw it through the eyes of two black people in the early 60s, which was the civil rights era. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, you know what, this works as a civil rights allegory, because right. they're slaves, they're being treated like livestock, And I watched Spartacus again recently, and I went, keeping in mind that they're slaves and there's a slave revolt, Spartacus works better than the movie The Birth of a Nation that came out a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh. The controversial director.
The controversial one. Mm-hmm. Bless his heart.
They're not guilty. Not the guilty. Like they say in Chicago. Not the guilty.
But man, and I think of that. I think of how wonderful Kirk Douglas was, and that Spartacus was early. And hearing the receptionist going, "You want me to tell Spartacus to go home?"
First of all, can we just give a moment to Selma Diamond?
Yes!
AKA our receptionist.
Yes. Please, please, please.
You want me to tell Spartacus to go home? I'll tell him, but I got to go on my break.
Only in New York. Only in New York. And calendar pages fall, in the future, fast forward. I was at Good Day New York, and I was supposed to interview live on the show a pop diva. She'd been a diva for like 10 minutes, who showed up so late.
For a live set.
For live. Nice. I mean, she was really, how late? Even Grace Jones went, "Ooh, girl, you late."
You see, again, that's why you need to be of a certain age to really appreciate that joke. You really do. If you don't, that is just funny, yo. I'm sorry.
You need to be of a certain hue and age.
Click on that one, girl. Or at least if you're going to try to go to one of her concerts. Let's put it in a term they can understand. She was the Lauryn Hill of the day.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Just not so attitudinal. You get there when she gets there. Don't be rushing me. I'm Grace Jones.
So this was Maya, M-Y-A. She only had the one name.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because she was so late and then came in late with an entourage, not apologizing, saying, when I go on, I needed to thank this person and this person and this mm-hmm. person, because I mentioned him on the back of my CD and went into hair and makeup. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I just went on the set and the anchor was laughing because she said, she's not here. I said, I'm going to read her intro anyway because it's time. Mm-hmm. I'm reading her intro and then she walked on, mm-hmm. you know?
Because we don't play that. You ain't going to make me look bad.
I'm doing my job.
Wait, we can't have two black people not on time.
For real.
Sorry. Double CP time.
Really?
Not good for television. Uh-uh. Not good for live television.
And one of us is gay and black, so you know.
Honey, they're going to get me first. So
you know that.
At least you got an extension. Honey.
Yeah.
They're selling me out.
So they... If only they could all be as professional as Kirk Douglas.
Right.
Now, while you're listening right now, I want to tell you the names of some Kirk Douglas movies that you can probably find all of these on DVD, and you should see them. Spartacus.
Of course.
Lust for Life. The Bad and the Beautiful. I think that is my favorite Kirk Douglas movie. I love him in The Bad and the Beautiful. 7 Days in May. Paths of Glory. Lonely Are the Brave. Disney's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And I don't know if you can find this one. It's a romance. He didn't do a lot of romantic comedies, and this shows you why. This one, it's kind of... It's
okay, Bobby, how is that a recommendation?
Okay, because it's one of these that... Okay, I had a couple of cocktails when I watched it. It's
shirtless. Yeah.
And it's so bad that it's good. Uh-huh. It's called For Love or Money, and it's Kirk Douglas with Mitzi Gaynor.
I love Mitzi Gaynor. Don't get me started.
You and me both. You and me both. You and me both. And the thing is, but it was the script that they were battling. Mm-hmm. And here's why I could not take my eyes off of it. Mitzi Gaynor had the worst hairstyles ever given to a good actress in a movie.
You know, I was sitting here on pins and needles. I was not expecting that.
You've got to try to find this. Okay, because I'm looking at her thinking, okay, the same five carpenters who did Ann Miller's hair in the 1970s. Most of them started their craft on Mitzi and this.
Out here.
Oh my God!
Hope you have me out here in this hallway clowning.
Oh God! Oh God! We just queened out on a podcast.
It's like a big ball of glitter just went off of people's ear.
Oh God! I'm crying.
Who knew Kirk Douglas gave all of this? But don't you be talking bad about my Mitzi Gaynor.
No.
Because I love me some Mitzi Gaynor. Honey, she was one of those people that, you know, in my early moments in the radio, she was one of the first, like, am I sitting in a room with Mitzi Gaynor?
Oh.
Shut the front door.
And doesn't she look fabulous?
She's gorgeous. And just so old Hollywood still.
Old Hollywood class.
Still.
Working it.
Honey.
We love her.
Shout out Mitzi.
Love Mitzi. Love me some Kirk Douglas. Happy memories of September 12th, 1988. For Love or Money. You know what? You know, folks, look. You know, no other two black men in the world are sitting up in a microphone talking about the movie For Love or Money with Kirk Douglas and Mitzi Gaynor.
And falling out over Mitzi Gaynor.
And falling out over this.
God.
Child.
Come on, those no business like show business.
You know it.
Mm-mm-mm. Honey, her and Marilyn Monroe and what's his name?
Mitzi?
Donald O'Connor.
Mitzi Merman Monroe.
Shut up. And you know what she said about Merman?
What did she say? This was a movie. There's no business like show business. 1954 movie, 20th Century Fox.
So I sat in an interview with her on my old job.
Yeah.
And she said that Merman was fabulous to work with for them, her and Donald O'Connor, because... you know, Merman was old school show business, old school Broadway. Like, you know, call time is 8. That means you're showing up at 7:30, ready to start first song, note, whatever, at 8 o'clock.
Right.
Marilyn Monroe, of course you remember, was still dealing like with the acting teacher coming and this and that. And she goes, Mitzalah. I don't understand that one. When are we going to stop? And to have Mitzi Gaynor do Merman.
I would die to hear that.
It was hilarious. I have to look and see if I have it in my archive somewhere. But if I do, I'll let you know.
Ethel Merman
mm-hmm.
did a one-night concert in Milwaukee. Of course I had to go.
If you didn't, the cry heard around the world.
For real.
You'd have been standing outside the theater like Stella Dallas crying.
Please. Merman. Yeah, with a handkerchief in my mouth. So I go, and we wanted to have drinks afterwards. So we went to the Pfister Hotel. That's a nice, you know, top of the roof cocktail lounge.
Now, why is it that Pfister is the only name that I remember from the Laverne and Shirley series?
Because it was in Milwaukee,
so it was true. Okay.
Yeah, there really is a Hotel Pfister. So we're getting in the elevator, and then one person we had no idea that Merman was staying in the hotel too. So there are like five of us in the elevator, and in walks Ethel Merman by herself. And we don't want to make it obvious. Because Ethel Merman. Okay. This is Ethel Merman walking into the elevator at the Hotel Pfister. Penthouse, please! Our eardrums were blown out. This woman asking somebody to hit the penthouse button.
I like all six of y'all dive for the fucking elevator. Yes, Miss Merman.
Yes,
Merman. You big sissies.
It's true.
What queen is going to get to that button first to tell that story? Like fucking Survivor.
I will tell the story for years and years. Every Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
And her name was Ethel Merman. Pass the cranberry sauce, please.
There are five dead queens in an elevator. But Merman made it to the top.
Yeah, the top.
Oh, Lord. Okay, we got to take a short break. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Merman. Thank you, Mitzi. Thank you, Kirk Douglas. Thank you for listening to Mocha, Man of a Certain You and Age. We're going to take a short break and come on back.
Mocha.